Imagine you're a single mom of 8 kids. Hard enough, right? Now imagine you've lived through war. And now you and your 8 kids are sent to live in a new country on the other side of the world. I'm Anna Gonzalez.
I'm Alex Nunes, and this is Mosaic.
It's April, the weekend before Easter, and I'm in the pews of St. Vartanans, an Orthodox Armenian church in Providence. It's my first time in an Armenian church. St. Vartanans has domed ceilings painted to look like a beautiful summer sky. There's a neon cross in the center of the wall over the altar, and off to the side, there's a small baptismal font. It's getting filled with water. That's the sound you're hearing. After everyone finds a spot in a pew, Reverend Capriel Nazarian comes to greet us.
Welcome, everybody. This is a very, very special day.
There are about 30 other people here, all Armenian. That is, except for the group of 8 kids in the first 2 pews. You can't miss them. They're right in the center, and they stick out because they're African. And they're in a sea of white Armenian churchgoers. They're siblings from the Democratic Republic of Congo. Refugees.
All of our friends are going to become a part of God's family today. And that's what it is in baptism. We become a part of God's family, that universal.
In today's show, we hear how a community of immigrants with their own tragic history is helping these present-day refugees find their way to an American dream. St. Vartanans Armenian Apostolic Church is nestled between Broadway and Armenia Street in the West End section of Providence.
Even though the neighborhood has turned into more of a hipster hangout today, there's a lot of history in those blocks.
Yeah, so many different immigrant groups have called the West End home over the years, and you can see it in the architecture.
The building St. Vartanans uses was originally an Episcopal church, built in 1890. But the Armenian community took it over in 1940 to accommodate the growing Armenian population.
Yeah, it's actually the second Armenian Orthodox church in Providence. The first is up by Smith Hill. That's where the majority of Armenians settled when they first came to the U.S. at the turn of the 20th century, during and after the Armenian Genocide.
To give you a very simple history, the Armenian Genocide was this horrible two-year period from 1915 to 1917, when the Ottoman Empire tried to extinguish the Armenian community because of their Christian faith. 1.5 million people were killed, and countless more were forced to flee.
And this was before the word genocide even existed, and before the term refugee was used to describe an immigration status. But the Armenians who settled in Rhode Island were refugees.
In the 100-plus years since the genocide, Armenian Americans have established themselves in Rhode Island and the United States in general.
It's hard to believe that some of the best legislators came off that street.
That's Manoug Kaprielian. He's a staple of the Armenian community in Providence. And he's talking about what he calls the original community of Armenians up on Douglas Avenue in Smith Hill.
We had people that didn't know the one word of English language, but became the Chief Justice of the Rhode Island Family Court.
But obviously, getting to that point is a process. It takes generations of families and community to create stability and wealth.
Yeah, and those first few years after someone immigrates to the United States are particularly difficult because it's an entirely new world, and they're usually realizing that America isn't what they thought it was going to be.
Sometimes we're watching the movie for the United States. You can see, this is the life for United States.
This is Clement. He's 20 and the oldest of those 8 kids in St. Vartanans. I'm sitting with him and his mom, Pachuna, in their apartment on the south side of Providence.
Because if you see the 50 Cent, the Lil Wayne, sometimes you watch the movie, the Van Damme. You know Van Damme?
Van Damme.
Chris Brown. The Chris Brown. Sometimes like that, the superstar for this country. So this is the life for United States.
So Jean-Claude Van Damme, 50 Cent, and Lil Wayne are Clement's ideas of classic Americans before he gets here.
Yeah, but he's finding out that the American life in the movies and music videos he and his siblings love isn't the life he gets to lead.
But I don't think many things on the future. But for this time, I think about my school, because I want to start a school to finish my school. This is my project, the first project I have. And every day I pray to God to help me to found the school. Mm-hmm. This is my future, I think, every day.
But Clement can't go to college because he hasn't been able to get a green card.
And you need a green card to get federal financial aid.
So instead, he got a job washing dishes in Cranston. It helps his mom pay the bills refugee resettlement agencies won't cover. And she's working too.
So she works as a housekeeper in a hotel.
This is Pachuna, Clement's mom, speaking to me through an interpreter named Winifred.
She's not going to serve her children breakfast. She just prepares everything because she has to leave at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Pachuna takes 3 buses to get to work in Newport. It takes 2 hours each way.
Which hotel in Newport?
Chanel Hotel. Chanel Hotel.
Okay.
The Chandler Hotel is one of the fanciest places in Newport, by the way.
Yeah, and Pachuna works there all day and then comes home to cook for her 8 kids.
All right, so just to be clear, the family is getting help from resettlement agencies here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they weren't just plopped down in the middle of a foreign country to fend for themselves.
No, they weren't. They have case managers at Dorcas International, and they're getting additional support from the Armenian community.
Okay, yeah, all right, got it. So let's talk about that a little bit more, though. How does a family of 9 Congolese refugees end up in an Orthodox Armenian church? I mean, that seems almost random. How do they wind up being baptized there?
Okay, to understand that, we need to go back about 40 years to a small village in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
She's born in Uvira.
Uvira is on the east side of DRC Congo. Pachuna lives there with her family until she's 17, and she gets married. She goes to live with her husband's family in another town. She has 2 sons almost immediately, and then the war starts.
So it was a civil war with many different factions.
Again, that's Winifred, Pachuna's interpreter.
Her husband then left her when the war had started.
Her husband goes to fight in the war, and Pachuna lives with her father-in-law. She comes back from the market one day and sees him being killed by rebel soldiers.
They took her. They captured her.
Pachuna is crying as she retells this next part.
So the soldiers, quotes, took her and wounded her with a knife, stabbing her in her upper leg.
They let her go. But she's all alone. Her husband's still fighting, and her only family has just been killed. So she takes her 2 babies, straps one to her front and the other to her back, and she walks. She walks for 6 miles on a wounded leg until she comes across another woman.
And she explained to this woman that she did not know where she was going, that she had seen a person killed in front of her own eyes, and she was traveling, fleeing a war zone. And so the woman said, well, come and stay with me.
They stay together for 2 weeks. Pachuna heals. But then it becomes clear that this village in the Congo isn't safe from the war either. So Pachuna and this woman cross the nearby lake into Burundi. It's the year 2000. And Pachuna never goes back to the Congo.
So what happens after that? Does she start trying to come to the U.S.?
It's kind of unclear, but the first thing Pachuna does is register herself and her sons as refugees with the U.N.
And then they settle them in a refugee camp?
No, she actually starts working, and she sells vegetables at a market. She's self-reliant, taking care of her babies with some help from new friends. And Pachuna lives like this for months and months, until one day she's at the market selling vegetables, and somebody recognizes her. And they say, I know you, and I know your husband, and he's here in Burundi. I'm going to go get him.
What? I thought he was fighting a war.
He was. He's not fighting anymore, I think.
So he's alive, and he's in the same town in this other country, just like Pachuna.
Yeah, and I asked Pachuna how she felt in this crazy moment. Like, was she mad at him for just leaving her with 2 babies? Or is she extremely happy that he came back into her life? But she's very matter-of-fact. She says that the person brings her husband to her, and then they just start living together again.
So is he a refugee too?
At this point, I don't think so. It's all a little confusing. But Pachuna tries to get him added to her case with the UN, but they tell her that the deadline to add a spouse has passed.
So what did they do then?
Nothing. It doesn't really affect their daily lives, at that point anyway. It becomes important later. But they're living in an apartment. Pachuna keeps selling vegetables. And her husband is a skilled tailor, so they're able to make ends meet. And they live like this in Burundi for 15 years. And they have 6 more kids. So now there's Clement, Armand, Henri, Claudine, Ketia, Gigi, Edgar, and baby Victor.
15 years, 8 kids. That's like a whole life. Why did they want to leave after all those years?
Well, Clement answers that question best.
Burundi is not my country. My country is Congo, but I'm a refugee in Burundi. We don't like to live in Burundi or to live in my country because in my country, no peace. And Burundi is the same thing.
Police in Burundi can stop anyone they feel like at any time and ask them for their IDs and then tell them that their cards aren't valid or aren't even their ID cards. They beat people up, arrest them for weeks, and won't stop until you pay them enough money. Clement says it's worse for Congolese refugees.
There's too many Congolese live in Burundi. They pass on the border. Too many people, and they kill them on the border.
Really?
Yeah.
From Congo to
come in Burundi, yeah.
So Clement and his family understandably want a safer life.
Yeah, but they don't know when that will be. But one day, in 2018, Pachuna gets a phone call.
They call mom on the phone and say, we need to see you.
It's the family's case manager at the UN. They tell Pachuna that she and her 8 kids are cleared to be resettled in the United States.
Yeah, we're so happy on the house. Mom say, but now my problem is finished because now I'm going in America. Everything they're gonna doing very well.
For Clement, America means peace, security, and free school. It's the home of Jean-Claude Van Damme and 50 Cent. It's the promise of what he calls the good life.
But the UN says only Pachuna and her kids can be resettled, not her husband.
Right. He's going to have to stay in Burundi. Pachuna tells her husband, this is a chance to give their children something she never had. Peace and endless opportunity. And she can't pass that up.
So she said, you've done everything for me that you could, but I should just continue on my own trajectory. And she told him that she would work to try to get him with her.
Now, this is obviously a bigger moment and a bigger conversation for Pachuna than she's telling us.
Right, because you don't just leave your spouse to go to another country forever with your kids without some tears and some emotion.
And while Pachuna doesn't really talk about her emotions like that, Clement does.
That's not easy. Everybody think about him. But I cry about him because every summer I was together with my dad. He told me, be strong only. Be strong for everything because all the family, they look at about you because I'm not over there. Everything I want to do if I was over there, if I will be over there, you want to do that in my place because I'm not. I said, okay, I want to do that.
So it's the end of May 2018. Pachuna is a single mom for the second time in her life, and she and her children are on their first ever plane ride to a place they'd never heard of, Providence, Rhode Island. And on the east side of Providence, a landlord is getting one of his apartments ready for a family of 9 refugees.
They're not going to end up living in a place like this, but it is their first stop.
It's Manu Caprielian again. He owns a fancy apartment building on the east side of Providence in Wayland Square. Normally, visiting Brown professors and minor league baseball players rent his apartments.
But for the past 2 years, Manuk has been working with Dorcas International, providing an apartment for refugees when they first get here until they find a more permanent place to live. He's housed over 70 people.
There's a figure that every second, 11 refugees are made in this world somewhere. And it's hardly 7 seconds. It's hardly 6 seconds of helping refugees. It just pales to the whole larger picture of what's going on in this world. And my gift is I can see that first moment of feeling freedom.
This is the pictures, the when we're coming, the first day.
Back in Pachuna's apartment, Manu gets sitting with us. And he shows me a photo he took the moment Pachuna walked through the door of his apartment, May 30th, 2018. She has the youngest kid, Victor, strapped to her back, and she's beaming into the camera. No sadness, only joy.
You look so happy.
Yeah.
I more than any other family, remembered that first moment when they walked in here with the credentials hanging off them and the smile, and they were singing. And I found out when I translated, they were singing the Lord's Prayer in Swahili.
The Muliliqua family are Christians, and back in Burundi, going to church was a huge source of community and fun. So Clement asks his caseworker, a Congolese man, if they can go to church with him. But it's far away, and he can't fit all 9 of the Muliliquas in his car. So they ask Manug if they could go to his church.
And I'm guessing they don't realize it's an Armenian Orthodox church?
No, they don't.
So I'd have to order 2 Ubers. And I had to make up like a baby seat for one of them because they wouldn't take them. And we went off to church.
But Sunday, the first Sunday, he bring all the family to the church. We pray for everything. The church is so surprised because the church from Manog, everybody is the white people. My family only is the African people.
See, the Armenian church is not only an ancient institution, but it's also the main place Armenians keep their culture alive in the United States. And it's not often they get new non-Armenian parishioners.
And that's the one thing about the Orthodox Armenian Church and the first nation to adopt Christianity. A quick change in that church comes every 600 years.
At St. Martinant's, I'm talking with some parishioners about the Muliliquas.
The minute they arrived in Rhode Island, they don't even know how to express themselves. They found out how to say, "I would like to be baptized." That was their first wish.
To see these children who have the faith to come forward and be baptized. They're not even Armenian, which is interesting. You're filled with joy watching them being baptized.
And so this is beautiful. This is where we're going to take these children and young adults to the baptismal font.
Reverend Nazarian asks all 8 kids to take off their shoes and get in line, from youngest to oldest, and stand next to the small baptismal font against the wall.
And then we're going to pour in the holy oil of our church, the Mura, which our church tradition has. It goes back to when Jesus sent out his apostles to go evangelize. When he sent Thaddeus and Bartholomew to Armenia, he sent oil with them to anoint and heal the sick. And our church has never allowed the oil to run out.
Then the Reverend asks all the godparents to come up. There are 4 godmothers total. Each one has 2 of the kids. But there's only 1 godfather. It's Manug. And he's crying.
They just emotionally bring me such pride. And they wanted to know why I was kind of crying today. You know, they couldn't get their minds around tears of happiness.
The feeling is mutual. The Muliliquas call him Baba Manug.
Yeah, if you say Baba, is daddy. Because moms, you don't have the parent. But now Manug is my grandfather.
Nikakutana na baba, marge baba likufa, lakini nikakutana na baba Manog. Nikashukuru Mungu, nikafurahi sana.
She's thanking God for, you know, her fate now, and also for having found Manug, you know, who helped her so much.
When I talk to Manug alone, he reads me the emails that he and the godmothers exchange, where they discuss what they're going to do next to help the family.
They're talking about their new house. It should be ready for Pachuna and her family to begin moving in on the 18th, which was 2 days ago.
There are dozens of these little messages back and forth talking about transportation, immunizations, transcripts. And with the help of Manug and the godmothers, Pachuna and the kids are moving to a bigger place up in North Providence, just in time for the kids to start school in the North Providence public school system.
And then it has Clement's phone number and it goes, "It takes a village," in an Armenian Sidov, which means with love.
And with the help and love of Manug, the Godmothers, and Dorcas International, Clement finally has a shot at getting closer to the good life.
The first class is the English for to read, the second for to write, and the math. It's the first semester, and the second, I want to take my classes for my business class.
Clement is attending Community College of Rhode Island in the fall. He says he wants to get his bachelor's degree in business so that he can own his own company and spend his days in a big, comfy office telling people what to do.
It's not quite Jean-Claude Van Damme status yet, but things are looking up.
Yeah, and Pachuna got a better job too, working at the same place Clement does in Cranston, so they drive there together.
And going to college, getting a better job, these are things a lot of folks might take for granted, but they're huge steps for a lot of immigrant families.
Yeah, they're steps towards making a home in a new place. And it's taken more than a year of really hard work for the Muliliqua family to get to this point.
Because when I talk to Manog, I say, Manog, I don't like America. What's up? And I say, I need to have the car, I need to have the everything. I say, no, everything goes step by step. You cannot to come to the second floor. You don't pass the first floor.
It sounds like Manug is helping Clement realize it's going to take a few more years to get that car like 50 Cent.
Yeah, he is. But it's not a one-sided relationship by any means. Manug gets so much joy out of being in the Muliliqua's lives. And he says the family is bringing new life into the Armenian community at St. Vartanans.
But I think something clicked. Maybe when they saw what they had endured as a people is something that 102 years ago we endured. And they felt maybe the reverberations of their own past through Pachuna and the family. It was like unspoken.
Mosaic is a production of the Publix Radio, edited by Sally Isley, with production help from James Baumgartner and Aaron Selbig. Our original music is by Bryn Bliska. Tori Malatia is the general manager of the Publix Radio. And thank you to Dr. Winifred Lambrecht and Dr. Richard Fleur-Lobin for helping with our interview with Pachuna. I'm Anna Gonzalez.
And I'm Alex Nunes. Thanks for listening.
Support for this podcast comes from Carnegie Corporation of New York, supporting innovations in education, democratic engagement, and the advancement of international peace and security at carnegie.org.